to. I don't know how much of a public figure I am, but I definitely would take the pledge. How do I go ahead and do that?
If you go on the website, you will see on the top right an orange button called okay. Take the Pledge. And so please go ahead and fill it out and indicate you're a public figure.
Okay, I will do that. Gleb, thanks very much for letting me know about that, and I accept the challenge. Well, Gleb Sibirsky, again, thanks so much for talking with us on KBOO today, especially all the way from Columbus, Ohio.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
We've been talking with Gleb Sibirsky, author of Truth Seeker's Handbook, A Science-Based Guide, and president of Intentional Insights, which is a nonprofit that promotes the topics of truth and alternative facts to a broad public. You can find out more at their website, intentionalinsightsalloneword.org. This is Ken Jones for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Calling Home the Dead on Thursday, October 19th at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Calling Home the Dead is a fundraiser for VOZ and KBOO Community Radio that includes music, dancing, a procession of cachinas y cachines, and delicious Dia de los Muertos pastries and horchata. The film, Calling Home the Dead, will also be screened, showing the Dia de los Muertos traditions of the towns that surround Lake Pátzcuaro in Mexico. Again, that's Calling Home the Dead on Thursday, October 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:01 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, Portland. This is Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart. In the studio with me tonight is Philip J. Wolf. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you. Hello.
Well, Philip, along with being a Portland resident, is also a city council candidate. He is running for Portland City Council, seat number 2, against Commissioner Nick Fish. So you may remember from the folks who are loyal listeners to the show, a month ago on this night, we had Julia DeGraw in this seat. So we are bringing another candidate for this position in to get their opinion and to get their platform heard. So, Philip, just want to talk a little bit about your background, and then we'll go right into some questions, because we only have about a half an hour here. So, maybe if you could just introduce a little bit about yourself and our situation right now in the studio.
Yeah, sure. So, I was chosen for the Portland Commission on Disability, PCOD, in December 2013. And I served for a number of years. In the first term, I did a number of work and then decided to run for a second term. And so I actually was just recently appointed as a liaison between them and Ted Wheeler as well, to focus on public safety and police. And in 2015, I was involved in COAB, and I was appointed through COAB as an advisor onto their advisory board for the community. and ran for chair for COAB as well. And so now I'm running for City Council 2018.
That is awesome. Well,
thank you. Thank you.
So that is pretty much all of the intro that I think we need to do. I'm going to jump right into some general questions if that works for you.
Yeah, sure.
Cool. All right. Well, the one that I like to start with.
Hold on. Actually, before I get going with questions and everything, I do want to mention that I do have an interpreter that's going to be my voice tonight because I am deaf. So.
Perfect. Well, then, yeah, that's pretty much all that needs to be said. And I'm going to jump right into some questions here. The first one is, and this is, you know, just for you, not regarding any specific issue, but what do you consider to be the most urgent problem facing our city right now?
You know, I want to respond with the fact that we have a number of really pressing issues here in Portland, and all of them are equally pressing and urgent. I don't think that it's easy to prioritize any one of them. If I had to choose one, though, that I say that would I would want to address, it's the police here in Portland.
Okay. Well, that is definitely an issue we are going to get into. We're going to be looking a little bit deeper into your platform, and that is certainly a point on your platform. So we will come back, circle back around to that. The next question I have for you is, when you leave office, what do you most want to have accomplished?
And what do I want to see accomplished when I leave office?
Yeah.
Ooh. You know, my hope would be that we have no police killings during that time.
That's a pretty great bar to set, I'd say.
Awesome. Yes.
Well, then the third general question I have for you here is, where do you feel our present city leadership falls short?
I think relating to transparency, community engagement. You know, our leadership, our city council, our mayor, or any of them, really. I think the point is Portland politicians. They should be under our community. They should be representing our community. And that's a serious deficit that we can see in the people who are representing us right now. We need people who really have a pulse on the community and can empathize with us and know what our needs actually are and engage with us.
That's a great bar to set as well. A question that I didn't necessarily have written down here, but just to sort of set context for folks, it's pretty widely known that Chloe Udaly, city councilor, is the only city councilor that lives on the east side of the Willamette River. I am fairly certain that you are also, if elected to city councilor, would you be one of the few that lives on that side of the river as well, or are you a west sider?
I live in the west. I'm a west sider. Okay. So.
That is all right. I mean, you know, I don't think that anyone holds that against anyone else, but...
Yeah.
And there's plenty of Labor Radio listeners that live on that side of the river as well.
Of course.
Cool. And we mentioned a little bit earlier that we were going to talk about your views for police reform and the police in general, so I'm going to jump right into that section here. It's pretty widely known. Okay. It's kind of big news right now in Portland that we have a new police chief, maybe one of the most... serendipitous or amazing last names for that. Her name is Outlaw, and she is the chief of police. That just tickles me a little bit.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
that joke may almost be played out at this point. It has been a few months, but but anyways, do you have you met her at all? Have you seen her speak, or do you see her as a potential ally in your efforts towards police reform?
So I haven't actually met her yet. I have watched all of the presentations and interviews that she's had so far. And only because they had captions on them was I actually able to access them at all.
Right.
Thankfully. But I did have that opportunity. And I would really love to sit down with her and really engage with her. I want to, you know, see what her real vision is. Because I do have some concerns. And I think other people do, obviously. I want to see where we can engage with her to see the community and get her work to apply to our needs in the community. I really want to address just the conflicts that I see. I think it's hard to say my opinion about her specifically because I haven't obviously sat down and met her yet. Just from interviews, I can give some ideas maybe on what I think of her and her platform.
Right.
Yeah, I can kind of expand on that. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
So, of course, I am excited that we have a new chief. I do want to make sure that I mentioned that.
Right.
But I do have a big concern. It is a big, big concern for me. And that concerns me to no end, unfortunately, is when she arrived to Portland, the statement that she made was, "I'm not here for police reform. I'm here to improve our police," and I see that as, you know, militarizing or improving, you know, depending on what word you want to use. And I'm so motivated and passionate about police reform. This is my job. This is what, you know, I want. And as a city councilman, you know, you're working with people where you're empowering them to work directly with police and make those kinds of changes. And, you know, the First Amendment speaks about our freedom of speech, our freedom to protest, and of course that relates to issues like Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And just for me, I see that police are almost waving things like Blue Lives Matter and that sort of rhetoric in the face of the community. And so we have a woman who is a person of color who is representing both Blue Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter in the way she presents herself. And so for me, that's a big conflict.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, in the city of Portland, we have, you know, over the last, well, you know, over decades, but really over the last year since the election of Donald Trump, we have seen a pretty pronounced presence of protesters in the streets, and we have also seen the reaction of the police. It has, you know, for lack of a better term, it has been pretty scary the way that they've reacted to, you know, largely peaceful protesters.
Definitely.
Yeah, and so, you know, with Chief Outlaw saying something like that I'm not here for police reform, I'm here for police improvement, you know, some people may take that to mean, you know, to those two terms to be equivalent, but I think it's interesting that you do point out that seems to be like it's leaning towards more escalation and more militarization of their presence and of their response to, you know, what are mostly peaceful protests in this city.
Right. Yeah, and I think that, like you mentioned, we can look at the history, especially in Portland, because, you know, history says that Portland is one of the whitest cities in the United States. And it's obvious that racism runs deep in the police force, in the police's use of force, and it's things that have not been addressed for a number of years. There's no transparency with it. We see a continued escalation. We see a lack of real training. And so we have to think, how can we support the community's concerns and for them to feel better? You know, like you mentioned, Trump running for president and becoming president, it caused a reaction that is serious.
Right.
You know, that didn't just increase and escalate for no reason. These are people who are trying to get their message heard and work together and cause a movement to spread and to, quite frankly, exercise their First Amendment right. So,
yeah. And, I mean, just sort of going back around to the police reaction to those protests, I mean, I know that a major part of your platform is to work towards demilitarizing the police and de-escalating their approach to just, you know, people expressing their constitutional rights.
Right. Absolutely.
Do you what tactics do you see as being effective for de-escalating those situations, and how would you go about implementing those?
Great. Well, firstly, I think that we need to really sit down and look at the crowd control policies that we already have in place. We need to see the directives and just review everything that the city has already made. And my ideas would be included with that. And of course, I would want to pool ideas out of our community and then overlay all of those together. And once we kind of have an approval from our community, once we have people who feel like their voice is heard, we can really present something back to the city for change. With my experience with actually leading a protest about ending police brutality, this happened a few months ago, we took over the streets. I actually had negotiated with the police beforehand to not show up unless I specifically request, you know, them being needed for a situation.
Yeah.
We did have a few moments where it was kind of scary, and actually we did have an undercover police car try and force its way and escalate a situation with us in the middle of the road. Jeez. And that leads to the point of our actual protest and the attitude that we're against in the first place. So it really made our point well. And, you know, we have so many people that are included in different groups, like the Antifa group, you know, who came. They were at that protest. They helped lead us. They didn't cause any sort of escalation. In fact, they de-escalated. They helped people with mobility issues move within the protest. And there were people who came and tried to escalate the situation and sort of get in our face. And people met them and de-escalated it. And everything worked out peacefully. So I think that... I really want to point out that the police don't have to show up. You know, we see so many times that police will show up with riot gear automatically, and that escalates the situation from the beginning. We need to figure out ways to address how to do this better.
Right. I mean, it's, we've seen it time and again, you know, from Ferguson to really the streets of every single city in this country. And, you know, even as far back as like 1968 at the Democratic Convention, you have moments where you have peaceful protesters expressing their constitutional rights to protest, and then the police show up in what is, you know, arguably military garb, carrying weapons and looking very intimidating, and creating a situation where, had they not been there, there would have just been peaceful demonstrations. But instead, they intentionally escalate, and, you know, obviously,
yes.
Yeah, and this is
absolutely that's exactly, and it's depressing to see. It's so discouraging to see.
Yeah,
and I don't mean that the situation itself is discouraging. I don't want to say that it's not severe. I really want to emphasize that this is a terrible, severe situation, but it is discouraging just to the fact that. You know, as you said, as a protest is going on or as a movement is going on, as soon as the police show up, it's taking the voice of those people. It's arresting those people just for speaking. You know, we recently had 250 people that their cases were removed from the courts that, you know, just they were arrested at these protests and then nothing happened out of it. Why are we even arresting them? 250 cases that happened. So even speaking back to, you know, Chief Outlaw, when I'm trying to think about how she can support police reform, how we all want to support police reform, does her vision match what we see as reform? You know, and yes, you know, I've already spoken with many police myself, actually, who have on the job experience. And I do want to say there are good cops, and there is a difference, though. Yes, we have good cops, but they're still under a system of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
So that system and police culture is oppressive in itself. So you can say there's good cops and you can say Chief Outlaw is there, you know, but she's still representing this system and this culture. So all of them are these bad cops or representing this bad system until we get true reform. And so that's what I mean when I say, you know, police reform.
Right. That's just, it sort of reminds me that, you know, the phrase that's always used, or at least was maybe a couple of years ago, was, you know, a few bad apples when referring to these instances of police acting out of line or, you know, being overly aggressive. They always say, you know, oh, it's just a few, we have a few bad apples. But it always struck me that no one ever finished that statement. And the phrase is, a few bad apples spoil the whole bunch. And, I mean, obviously, we're talking about more than just cops and police officers, their personal opinions and their personal approach infecting the rest of their unit, but really a system that is designed intentionally to be oppressive.
Yes.
Yeah.
That. And if exactly what you just said, you know, it seems from what you said that you were on the same page with that. So.
Right. Well, this is a question that I actually is just coming off the top of my head, but it is an issue that has come to the fore over the last few months, but you know, the Antifa, the anti-fascist movement in this country has been equated largely, or, you know, in certain circles and maybe the mainstream media, has been equated to the alt-right and the white supremacist neo-Nazi people that are, you know, really coming up from the depths of our collective, you know, well, wherever they're coming from. What do you believe that, I mean, obviously, you know, you've spoken to the fact that you have marched with Antifa members, you believe in what their cause is, but what do you think that the city of Portland could do to help, I guess not de-escalate, but reduce the rhetoric around them being an extremist organization and them being a, you know, akin to terrorist organizations? What would you see as a city councilor, or even just as a citizen of Portland, as a activist in the city, things that we could do to help spread awareness for the fact that they are simply resisting what is the onslaught of hateful rhetoric and hateful actions by the other side of the political spectrum?
I don't think there's a simple answer to that.
Right. Yeah.
I had a Mila, a person who was there offering their opinion and mine, who helped de-escalate the situation. But I know that there are people who are sitting on the outside that are really trying to assess the situation from just their lens, and that doesn't help anything. I know that our city leaders can do so much to stand and be visible. There's obviously work that they can do. They can be more visible on a community level and be working with the Antifa and kind of understanding where they're coming from, opening that communication. I just think that that's one place to start with that. And I think that just opening that communication and moving forward is a good way to start.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there clearly is a lack of communication from one side, or lack of understanding, potentially, you know, from both sides, but really from the side of authority towards the people, you know, expressing their rights to protest. So, yeah, I think that is the perfect place to start, just opening up dialogue, opening up communication about what it is that they are protesting. And, you know, we see it in what has happened with the NFL and the all of the vitriol around that the concept of what Colin Kaepernick and all of these athletes are protesting has been misconstrued to be they're protesting police and they're protesting the military. But no, that was never what they were protesting. They, in fact, some of them, you know, have families in the military, have friends, respect what it is that police and the military do to a degree. But it's that they are actually protesting against the system of white supremacy and oppression within the society. But when that message gets misconstrued and spun around, you can have hate directed towards them from people who wouldn't otherwise feel that way.
One thing I want to point out,
yeah,
relating to just city leaders in general,
mm-hmm.
with their continuation to refuse to recognize that the city of Portland and America was designed for white men.
Right.
The fact that we can pardon these people, the fact that we can, you know, in the city that it was built for, we continuously are just sort of running our head into the wall and not really getting anywhere because our leaders are refusing to accept responsibility and empower the community to actually make a change on an equal level. And that continual denial and empowerment, you know, thus it doesn't cause any sort of change. And so that's where I want the change to start. And I think that's where we can make things better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a continual blind spot in the power apparatus within our country, within, you know, the people that we tend to put in power and within the dominant culture as well, to the reality of how this country was built and what it was built on, you know. And so I think that you are absolutely right. And just sort of just because I'm looking at the clock and we have sped through a lot of this time, as is always the case, jumping along from one, you know, police overstep to, you know, another. Houselessness is another issue that is a major point of your campaign platform. Obviously, there is a crisis right now in this city, a escalating situation that, unchecked, yes, is going to become bigger and bigger and bigger. What steps do you think are necessary to take to address houselessness, and how do you think we can go about funding more programs to find safe housing for the houseless?
Great question.
Thank you.
So I live in the downtown area. I walk around all the day. I don't have a car, so I walk everywhere and take public transportation. And I tend to, you know, see the community, and that includes the houseless people that are there. You know, they're visible as you walk through this city. So relating to funding and the houselessness crisis that the city is facing, I think that we need to be creative on how we're getting money. I think looking at a federal level, a state level, a county level, looking for grants, looking for money anywhere we can get, you know, even to the point of fundraising, you know, maybe tax breaks, maybe, you know, as of right now, I don't have access to the Portland budget.
Of course.
So, you know, I wish that I could look at it and really have ideas to give to you today on, and I'm sure that the community has wonderful ideas on how we can work that out, even without looking at the, you know, the specifics of it. But I think that it's not just about houselessness that's a problem, but right. I think that relates to things that support that crisis. So we have a lack of health services in the city. Mm-hmm. We have a lack of, you know, often we notice, let's say, like housing or a house will be affordable. And we see that sort of buzzword on a lot of things. And yeah. I think affordability is so vital, but it's worthless without the word accessibility.
Yeah.
And that accessibility really is concrete in achieving both of those together and making things truly affordable. So I don't want to, you know, waste too much time going into that, but
no, I mean, you're absolutely right. And this is just my mind making connections, but I see a correlation between that and the rhetoric around, you know, well, people need expanded access to healthcare. Well, they have more choice now, but it doesn't matter if you have access to all these different healthcare plans if if it's unaffordable. There's just, you know, that's the same type of rhetoric that needs to be combated in a lot of different fields right now, it seems.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. They're intertwined with each other, and it's so important for our city leaders to recognize what that means yeah. and what intersectionality means and how that affects us in the community. If you get one without the other, then you're not really taking them all into consideration and seeing how they all affect each other. So that intersectionality truly yeah. is the key.
Absolutely. And, you know, just expanding off of that, you know, not only is there a houselessness crisis within the city, but there is, you know, even for the people who are housed, there is a crisis in housing. Rents, you know, the rents are too dang high in the city. What, you know, do you have proposals? Do you have thoughts as to what to do to deal with the housing crisis? You know, are you a fan of policies like rent control, or is there another idea that you have on how to allow the people that make the city great and that you know that work in the city be able to continue living here?
So I have a strong belief in rent control and needing to establish rent control, and I do need to research more on things just relating to rent control. For example, I want to know why we think that it's okay to just increase our rent. I really want to get to the base of the issue.
Yeah.
I want to pick that apart. Right now, there's not really laws or policies. There's no requirement to let people know that rent is going to be increased. You know, they can just sort of increase it and blame it on the systems that be. You know, there's no real rent control. So some sort of policy does need to be established for sure. I think we need to add things like tax breaks. If your landlord is willing to reduce your rent, maybe they can get a tax break and they can qualify for certain monies to figure out how things can balance out and benefit everyone. You know, we see condos and new buildings popping up in Portland all over the place right. using money. We need to hold off on all of that and take care of what we already have built here. You know, mm-hmm. they're being built around us all the time. It's drives me crazy. We can see giant new parking lots for all of these new businesses and all of these new condos that yeah. are going to be charging whatever. You know, we can use that space for housing. We can use places where people have larger houses and maybe an offshore, you know, room or a separate sort of area. Maybe we can work out renting with that or situations with that. As a city, we need to be creative. I feel like so far the city's been going in a direction that's so off what we really need, and it's just about refocusing and getting creative on addressing these needs.
Yeah, I mean, you see it literally everywhere in the city, these giant buildings going up. You know, there's cranes. Our skyline is mostly cranes at this point. And there's these, you know, brand new kind of cookie-cutter apartments going up everywhere. But, you know, it, just like you said, you know, affordability does not equal access. You know, it may be quote unquote affordable, but what is, you know, affordability is a relative concept. based on what type of access you have to that housing and to a fair job and fair payment and things like that. It's striking to me that we have all these new condos and apartments going up, and some of them can't even be filled, and yet there is such a major houselessness crisis in the city. And I would love to continue going with that. Unfortunately, we are about a minute out. This is for those folks listening out there. We are in part one of a two-part interview. So join us again exactly 1 month from tonight on the third Monday of November. Philip will be back, and we will be going into more issues from his campaign platform, particularly talking about the transportation issues in this city, and a few other major pressing issues. So, Philip, in the 1 minute that we have left, if folks out there are inspired by what you're talking about, how can they find more information about you? Where can they find ways to get involved?
Yeah, so first off, thank you for your time in interviewing me. This has been a pleasure. So people can start by looking on my website, actually. It's www.philip4portland2018.com. So philip4portland2018.com. That goes into my platform, my goals, how people can donate, just things that I want to accomplish. All of that information is right there, easily accessible to see. And then I am also hosting a kickoff party on October 22nd. It is going to be a smaller sort of event. I really want to focus on the core of the community and have just a small number of people there, and then hopefully let it sort of grow and bubble from there. And so that'll be the beginning of my journey, and hopefully people come along with me.
Awesome. Well, once again, Philip J. Wolf, thank you so much for being here. He is running for City Council seat number 2 against Sitting Commissioner Nick Fish. Join us exactly 1 month from tonight, Labor Radio, the third Monday of November. We will embark on part 2 of this interview. I am Michael Cathcart. Thank you for joining us for Labor Radio. Have a great night.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.